Good morning, everybody. Welcome. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Peter. I'm a partner with MPM Legal. We're a specialist employment law and business immigration practice based in the south of England. We help businesses that are all over the UK and, in fact, all over the world. They have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK, and that's where we help. Delighted as ever to be joined by my colleague, Adrienne. Good morning, Adrienne.
Good morning.
And we're speaking to you from sunny South Oxfordshire today. The rain has finally dissipated. Just a couple of housekeeping points before we get into today's session. And I know those of you that are regular joiners will have heard me say this a million times, so apologies. This is a recorded session. You will be able to catch up on our website. We've also got our podcast, which is on Spotify and Amazon Music and other podcast providers. So have a look. I think we've got something like 45 back sessions that are on there, posted on LinkedIn the other day about some of the topics we've covered this year alone. What we're going to be talking about today is the law as at the 18th of July 2024, for those of you who are listening in the future. So it's all relevant up to today's date. We absolutely welcome questions to these sessions. If you want to ask a question, we'll do our best to answer it. Just use the Q&A function down at the bottom. Unlike last week's session on the government changes, I'm not flying solo today, so it'll be a little bit easier for me to manage those questions that are coming in. So do ask questions. We encourage them. If you want to chat to other participants, just use the chat function down at the bottom as well. So we planned this topic way back in the winter when we had no idea when the general election was going to be called. Obviously, in the winter, we'd had the party conference season. We kind of knew what was being talked about in terms of the different employment law changes that had come in down the track. But we just scheduled out what sessions and what topics we thought would be of interest. And probationary periods was one that we wanted to revisit. Now, the relevance of this as a subject matter is it won't have escaped your knowledge that the forthcoming legislative agenda announced at the opening of Parliament yesterday included provision for day one employment rights. Now, for those of you that are joining or listening from overseas, and I know that quite a few of you are in the States, you do need a fair reason under UK employment law to dismiss an employee. However, employees, generally speaking, have no ability to bring a claim before they've hit 2 years continuous employment with that particular employer. So although on paper you need a fair reason to dismiss, in the absence of a fair reason, if the employee has less than 2 years service, there isn't very much they can do to enforce their rights. Now, there's going to be a massive change to that because this new government have said they're going to let the enable the ability to bring an unfair dismissal claim to be a day one right. So everybody will have it from day one of employment. Now, we also know, if they're true to their word, that there is going to be some sort of carve out or process where probationary periods are being used. What the government have said on that is employers will be able to operate probationary periods to assess new hires, but changes introduced by their new deal, which is what they're calling this programme of change, will help to ensure that there are fair and transparent rules and processes and that new hires are not fired without reason or without clause. So that's why there's a focus on probationary periods again, and they're going to be even more critical as the law changes. I just want to launch a quick poll. I wonder whether you would mind please just answering a couple of questions. The first is whether your organisation actively manages probationary periods at all. And then the other is just about day one rights. So whether or not you think day one unfair dismissal rights are a good thing. So I should have just launched that. I don't know if you can see it, Adrienne.
It popped up and then it went again. So I don't know whether you have to launch it again.
See if that is running. Yeah. Looking like it's running. Let me just leave that going for a few seconds to give you a chance to answer, because we have got loads of you on the call today, which is fantastic. Yeah, okay. So,
shall I crack on and talk
yeah,
about
you crack on
probationary
the, you
periods
crack on
as
to
the
the
law
next bit
currently
and I'll
stands?
revisit
Yeah,
that.
okay. So, I mean, I think now's the time when we can look at what we're doing about probationary periods right now, because it could be a while before the law changes. But obviously, most of you will know that the purpose of a probationary period is to give you, the employer, time to assess an employee, to see if they're fit for the role, whether they've got the right skill set. And that's why, well, I'm for one, I'm quite an advocate of probationary periods. Now, in our earlier season, we had a sort of a mini debate, myself and another lawyer, about the pros and cons of probationary periods, and I come down quite firmly on the side of them being useful. Now, some companies don't include them for a really senior hire, but even in that case, it is sometimes included. You don't typically see them, however, in short-term contracts, but probationary periods will achieve little if they're not managed or if they're used effectively. And some employers choose not to have them on the basis that a new employee simply won't have the qualifying service to bring an ordinary unfair dismissal claim, but instead they'll just rely on the ability to terminate on notice under the contract, where the employee doesn't meet the required standards well ahead of the employee accruing 2 years' service. Now, what we're seeing is, well, what we've seen probably over the last, I would say, 5 years, is an increase in employees who don't have 2 years' service bringing claims for discrimination or other claims where that 2 years' service isn't required. And that's, I mean, I would say that probably the vast majority of the employment tribunals that I've been involved in, and to be fair, I try not to be involved in them too much because I try and keep trying. Those are the claims that we're talking about. In terms of length of probationary periods, these are likely to depend on the nature of the job and how long it will take the employer to assess performance for the purposes of confirming continued employment. But I think it's not unusual to see probationary periods of up to 6 months.
Yeah, that's right. I think in terms of capturing this in an employment contract, what we'll typically see, and no doubt those of you that have probation periods, and by the way, 90% of you on the call, your organization does use probation periods, so clearly it's something that you're familiar with. They'll also provide that employment can be terminated on a shorter notice period. Now, obviously, there's a minimum statutory period of notice which applies once an employee commences employment. But what we'll see is the contract will say, well, the notice you're entitled to once your probationary period is completed is a longer period. So it might be a 3-month period once probationary is completed, but a 1-month period during the probationary period, or 1 week, and that extends to 4 weeks, something like that. Now, that's where we commonly see issues, and it's that dispute over whether or not the right period of notice has been served or has been paid for. And we see that because sometimes it isn't actually clear whether the employee is still in a probationary period or not. And question mark, have they ticked over inadvertently into the probationary free period, so into that longer period of notice? Now we'll talk a little bit later about how you can actually manage that on a practical level. Just be aware that there is a provision in the Employment Rights Act that says the written statement of particulars of employment must include details of any probationary period, and that includes any conditions around the probationary period and its duration as well. So if you don't capture that concept accurately within a contract, you may inadvertently be breaching those Employment Rights Act provisions. And the consequence of that is, in some limited circumstances, employees can bring a claim in respect of it. From memory, I think it's a claim that's tagged on to something like an unfair dismissal claim, and there's an extra award of compensation. What I want to do, though, is just fast forward to a point in the future where this employment rights bill that was announced yesterday is actually in force, and we've got day one unfair dismissal rights in play. Then what?
Well, it's absolutely crystal ball gazing, isn't it? Well, as Peter said, they might introduce a rule that there can be no unfair dismissal claim if dismissal is during the probationary period. It could be that a failed probationary period may be made one of the potentially fair reasons for dismissal, a bit like capability, conduct, or redundancy, which are some of the other fair reasons. And another dismissal claim brought, but as an employer, you would be able to argue that the reason for dismissal came within this category of potentially fair reasons for dismissal. And of course, there's always going to be a dispute over whether or not that was the real reason for dismissal. But as it currently stands, no one knows anything yet other than probationary periods are going to be significant. But on that point, don't forget that the government have committed to consultation with trade unions and businesses under a set consultation period. So you can have your say either via the CIPD or as a business directly.
Yeah. Let me just take a question that's come in, whether we think that the government will specify a maximum length of probation period.
I think this is something that we were talking
about in last week's sort of pop-up session on the government changes. I think they would have to, right? Because otherwise the temptation is to say, hey, everybody, you've got a 2-year probationary period.
Yeah, and that then defeats the whole idea, doesn't it, of giving people day one rights.
They must circumvent it. Now, there's a commercial factor there, like question mark, who would sign a contract with that in, but maybe there's a big imbalance of power and somebody's desperate for a job. They'll, you know, maybe sign up for anything for the sake of being able to land a particular job. But yeah, I mean, I would expect something in the range of 3 to 6 months.
I would think so. But then it's also a question of whether or not they're going to take into consideration the ability to extend it, because, I mean, look, it cuts both ways, doesn't it? You might want to protect an employee, but if there's but if any legislation doesn't allow for a reasonable extension, as long as there are potentially reasonable grounds to do so, then arguably you are forcing employers to make a decision to say, well, we've got no choice but to dismiss somebody then. So there's a balance there in terms of fairness on both the employer and the employee, if an extension would be useful to help keep them in a job. So, you know, and I think this is the type of thing that we're going to be expected to see through the consultation process and the submissions that will be put forward by some businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. Just reverting to the other poll question, actually, just to give you some feedback on that. In terms of the question around, do you think day one unfair dismissal rights are a good thing? 39% of you agreed with that sentiment, that statement. 61% of you said, no, don't agree that it is a good thing. I've read a couple of pieces in the press saying, you know, this is fantastic, fantastic idea. Lots of employees are supporting it. The trade unions are obviously supporting it. I haven't seen much about what business are saying, actually, and that's partly why I wanted to ask the question, because I am curious to know what the sentiment out there is about it. Like you mentioned, Adrienne, the government are committed to consultation. They said they're going to run consultations on all of these changes, so you're going to get the opportunity to feed into it. If you're a member of CIPD, I imagine you're going to be able to do it through that professional organisation. Otherwise, you can directly comment as businesses and organisations. We expect to be able to comment as employment lawyers as well. So if anyone's got any burning, pressing feedback when it comes to it, then let us know, because we can feed it back in turn. Maria's question is, 2 years is too long, but day one, perhaps reverting back to 12 months. Yeah, I mean, the qualification period for unfair dismissal, it was put to 1 year in 1999. And then I think it must have been 2010, 2011, that it went to 2 years. And the lowest it's ever been since these rights were enacted was 6 months, I think. But I mean, I wasn't practicing as a lawyer when it was a 6-month qualification.
Before you say anything, neither was I.
It's like looking in your direction. No, so neither of us has kind of experienced such a short period of qualification.
I do remember when it went to 12 months, though, and that did actually make businesses sit up and take notice and arguably manage employees better at the earlier stages of their employment. So, you know, maybe that's where we're headed again. But do you want to talk about some of the practical points to consider using the
And I'll come back to that other question. Some of the practical things we think are really, really valuable. And by the way, we think these are going to stand you in good stead to insulate you partly from any of the day one rights changes. Like Adrienne said, there's a bit of crystal ball gazing in terms of exactly how these changes are going to operate in practice. So we've got some thoughts about how the government might be able to make it happen. But if you start getting into the mindset and habit of building these processes into your organization, if you're not using them already, then I think it is going to put you in a good place to help manage this significant change that is definitely coming. So first of all, make the employee aware from the outset what the approach is. So what are the specific goals or attainments that they're expected to achieve? What are the review processes? What are the timescales for review as well? Can you be specific on dates, when there's going to be check-in meetings, when there's going to be a probationary review meeting? One massive criticism we see around probationary periods is, yes, you will have the probationary period reference in your employment contracts, and the poll today shows that 90% of you are using them. But in terms of them being actively managed and used, that's where there are often deficiencies and where things start to fall down.
So yeah, and I think that's what we see. That's what we see an awful lot of, don't we? Is that, you know, for example, a typical scenario for us might be we want to dismiss somebody who's got less than 2 years service, and we say, have they passed their probationary period? And either the answer is, yeah, it's just gone, it's done. Or yes, they have passed it, but they shouldn't have done, and it hadn't been proactively managed, you know. And then it's difficult for the employee, because then you sit down with them and say, right, really sorry, it's not working out. And they'll go, well, hang on a minute, you've just passed my probation. So in terms of managing expectations, that's why it's really useful to be proactive during that period. I would just add in, as about or attainments, I do have quite a number of people say to me, well, there's no job description. So they might be hired in a role which has a specific title. And I think it's a job description is useful, because you can't always assume that they're going to understand exactly what your organization requires of them in that role. They may have performed that role for another company. It doesn't necessarily mean that the requirements from your company are going to be exactly the same. So, you know, job descriptions will set out the specific tasks. And then on that, that's when you build in your specific goals or attainments. So you've got this good paper trail. I mean, I see more job descriptions in my practice for immigration, for example, because those are required in order to get the certificates of sponsorship. But on a lot of occasions where that's not relevant, sometimes there is no job description.
That's a really good point. And I think it links to something else I've got in mind, which is your overall induction process as well, because I think that can really embed the values and behaviors and culture within your organization. And it helps you set the standard and say right from the outset, hey, this is what we expect of you, of our employees. And, you know, the reason for that is you've invested a lot of time and money and effort in terms of hiring someone. You want it to work. It's fair on them, but it's fair to let them know what the standards are that they need to meet. And then when you get to the end of that process and they say, well, you know, I think I've been doing a good job, you've got something to point to enable you to say justifiably, look, we've been clear with you what the standards are, what you need to be able to do, and we can demonstrate that you've fallen short of that, or indeed, hopefully, that you've passed it. You're going to go on and have a good career. So make the employee aware from the outset. Second, gather the information in good time. And again, this is something that we do see quite often, waiting until the end of the probation period, even worse, after that probationary period date's expired. So, hey, their probationary period ended 2 weeks ago, and we're now going to have this review meeting and talk to them. How do we position it? What are our options? Don't wait until the end of the probation period to identify or address underperformance. It's a bit like with performance management. And those of you that attended our session where we were looking at performance management processes and really, you know, our top tips in respect of those, there shouldn't be any surprises for the individual. By the time you get to the stage of sitting down with someone and either saying your performance isn't good enough, we're putting you on a PIP, or your performance isn't good enough, we're going to have to fail your probationary period, that really shouldn't come as a surprise. Now, we see those employees where it is a surprise for them, and that might be partly why they're in that position in the first place. But from your side of the table, there shouldn't be any surprises. It shouldn't be the first time that they get that message. So related to that then, third point, just give feedback. And fourth, keep a record of that feedback. So you're well within your rights to give appropriate feedback. And there's certainly an education piece for managers, people who have that responsibility about how to have difficult conversations, how to give feedback in a proportionate way. But don't be afraid of giving that feedback, as long as it's done in a reasonable way. You know, we don't want anybody ranting, raving, swearing at people, of course. It's just common sense stuff. But do give the feedback, and do feel free to keep a note of it, because that's your evidential chain to show, yeah, we talked about this stuff. This is what we said in week one. This is the feedback I gave. These are the reasons for the feedback. So keep that record. Fifthly, decide whether or not to confirm the employee in employment and communicate the decision before the end of probationary period. Like I've said, you don't want to tip over. It might have consequences in terms of what the actual notice period is that you need to serve or need to pay in lieu of, and it could be a bit more expensive than you're anticipating. We do see that quite a lot. The last tip is if you put yourself under a positive obligation to actually confirm completion of a probationary period, you reduce the chance of what we call this default completion simply because the end of the probation period comes and goes without being noticed or addressed. So there is some specific wording, some specific drafting you can put into your employment contracts to manage that, but it's a better approach to take unless you're super, super confident in terms of your diarising and management, your proactive management of that probationary period. Adrian, what are the other sort of common things that come across your desk on this?
Yeah, well, I've kind of mentioned it already. So, a manager might say at an early stage an employee's not meeting the standards, but actually doesn't give that feedback. And I think I would just add something on that feedback is in a probationary period, this is, it doesn't have to be that negative conversation, as Peter says. It's also an opportunity to make sure that you're offering the support because, probationary period is not just about them doing the job properly, it's about getting to know the organization. So basic things like, what if they're doing some kind of job that requires template reports, etc., do they know where those templates are? So it's being able to identify the support. And that's where managers, I think, often there's an ostrich mentality. That's probably what we see as managers very often because they are too scared to have these conversations and they're not equipped to do so, that they don't actually know how to deal with it. So it's stressing that it doesn't have to be negative. It's an opportunity to provide the support, and the manager should be told that they are under a duty to offer that support and to document it. But at the end of the day, there should be no surprises. An employee should not be getting to the end of a probationary period and it being a shock that they haven't met the standards. But what we see as well is that, if it is a surprise and they don't know that they're underperforming, they're going to go, "Well, my performance is fine. Nobody's told me otherwise. Therefore, there must be another reason why I'm not being kept on." And I'm talking about protected characteristics. I'm talking about employees looking to see if they've perhaps blown the whistle, so things aren't being done correctly. They'll be like, "That's the reason. So that's the reason why I'm actually being dismissed." Because in the absence of any communication, they're suspicious. And obviously, if there's regular communication and regular objective feedback from their manager, and also maybe good progress updates, "Yes, thanks, you did that bit really well. Let me take you through this bit. I was going to say a certain type of sandwich, but realised I probably shouldn't swear on a recorded call." That's the type of conversation that should be had. And that then also helps to have a document trail to defeat any potential discrimination or whistleblowing claims.
I think employees feeling that they're being treated fairly goes actually a really long way to heading off litigation, or grievances, and getting into a scenario where you're having to effectively dig your way out of a potential problem, right?
I mean, I think it's tough, right? Because, normally managers have hired somebody because they need somebody in the role. Our experience with recruitment processes is that they take ages, and therefore the manager may well have been short-staffed and under pressure to deliver. And that's why this type of stuff can so easily be overlooked. So it's recognizing from the manager's perspective, in your role as HR, that they may well need that support because it's going to be a very intense period, particularly in light of what we expect to be new legislation. And it's about having, equipping those managers with the tools to do it.
So one of the other sort of common areas we get asked about is extending probationary periods. Now you might want to do that. Why might you want to do it? Well, it may be that somebody has been unwell. I think Adrian, you're going to talk a bit about cases of ill health absence, how to manage that. But you might just think, actually, we can see the employee isn't quite there, but we just want to give them a little bit of extra time because we think, I mean, again, there are so many hidden costs involved in recruitment, right? And it's got to be very difficult to say, we're just going to fail the probation period. We don't want to give you any more time. We're just going to go back to the job market and start the whole cycle again with all the uncertainty that that brings. So you may well want to, as an alternative, actually just have a short period of extension. Now, it would be sensible to give you the tools to manage that, to have the contractual right to be able to extend it. If you've got that contractual right, then you can extend it unilaterally. But when you're doing it, again, some practical tips on managing it, tell the employee these things, why it's been extended, what aspects of the performance or behaviours are letting them down, what they've got to do to improve during that future period of probation. Are there any particular goals they need to achieve by when? What date is the extended probation period going to end? And just keep giving that feedback during that extended period. If you don't have that contractual right to extend, well, you can simply invite the employee to agree to vary their contract to provide for an extended probation period. So you can agree between you that there is going to be an extension. Now, I think my experience of this is employees generally will want to agree to an extension if they think that it gives them a chance to remain in employment. So that's the kind of leverage that you've got. If you don't have the contractual right and they don't want to agree to an extension, well, you make your decision based on the information that you've got available. Let me just, before I pass over to you, Adrian, deal with one of the questions, which is, if the probationary period is 3 months and a manager would like to extend, what's the recommended extension period? Can it be 3 months again, or could it be shorter? Firstly, I guess it depends on what your contract says about an extension. So, you know, when we see these clauses, it may say we can extend it by up to a further 3 months or 12 weeks, however it's drafted. So look at the contracts and see what it says. If it is, say, a 3 month probation period and you've got the ability to extend it by 3 months, I think it's a context specific decision. You got to look at, well, what's a reasonable time frame do we think as the employer for the employee to demonstrate what we're looking for? So it could be that they're 75% of the way there through the probation period that they've already worked, and you feel you only need another month to assess it, in which case extend it by a month. But I think just look at it in the round. Don't know what you
think. It's a bit like a performance improvement process. You know, one company's performance improvement period could be a week, depending on what targets and what tasks they're expected to meet. So I think it's looking at that. I mean, on extension of probationary periods, setting aside what whether you've got the, you know, if you've got the contractual right to extend, that's one thing. I also think that you've got to be extremely careful on consistency across the business. You know, I've spoken to quite a few HR people whose preference actually is not to extend, on the basis that if the manager's done their job properly, you should know, especially if you've got a 6 month probationary period, whether somebody's going to, you know, cut the mustard, so to speak. So I think it's always got to be a case from HR that you're across this, so that you are able to make sure that there is consistency, because, not to bring in the spectre of discrimination again, but I kind of have to, that if you extend for one person and you don't extend for another, you've got to be able to demonstrate why you've done that. You know, and it may be also an internal management process where a manager just says, oh, I haven't had the time to really assess, I want to extend. That's not really ideal. So that's something that you've got to be across. But the potential for discrimination is there.
Well, kind of link to that then, Adrian. What do you think about, you know, sickness, has been maternity, right, you know, that sort of stuff. How would you go about approaching that?
Yeah. So again, you know, I often get asked, employees being off sick for quite a few weeks during their probationary period, can we extend? Again, what does it say in your contract? That's the first point. Does it say in your contract that it might be that you have the ability to say that if you are absent through sickness or for a period of time during probationary, it will be extended? Because if you say that and you don't then extend, then that's potentially unfair. But I think that if somebody has been off sick for a while, then yeah, you should extend it, because you've not had that opportunity to be able to assess and support their performance through the process.
Yeah.
You've got to give the employee a fair go. They've got to feel like they're on that journey of fairness. So, you know, if they're being given the ample opportunity, and you know, and they may have had, you know, a month out of work, due to some kind of absence condition, and obviously you've got to be mindful of your disability and your reasonable adjustments, certainly extending a period would be within the range of reasonable responses and also meet the requirement for your adjustments, even if they were, you know, that's assuming that they had a disability. But just in terms of fairness, I think that's right. But look carefully at what the wording is in your probationary clauses. I think now's the time to kind of get your house in order to look at some of that stuff.
Definitely. What about termination then? And appreciate that, you know, at the moment we're doing this talk on the basis that we know that the law is likely to change. It hasn't changed yet. It's not going to change. Well, we don't think it's going to change super quickly in terms of probation periods and fairness. But you know, what about coming to terminating the employment relationship's probation period hasn't worked out? What sort of stuff we need to be thinking about there?
Well, I mean, it wasn't so long ago where the tap on the shoulder, come into a meeting, no notice, no sort of no process followed. Really sorry, it's not worked out. Your performance isn't at the right standard. Or even on occasions, we're not even telling you why your employment's ended because you're still in probation. That was quite common. But as I've said, because of the rise of discrimination cases, I think we tend to be a little bit more cautious now. So although the current state of the law is that if they haven't got 2 years service, they can't bring a claim, we would always recommend that some kind of process is followed. I mean, you know, if you're comfortable that there isn't really exposure to discrimination claims, then you might decide not to follow the ACAS code on disciplinary and grievance processes. Although you might want to consider definitely following some kind of process, just in terms of positioning it with the employee, telling them why you're going to be meeting with them, giving them some examples of where their performance falls short, and giving them the opportunity to talk about that in a meeting. And I'm doing that really just to avoid any discrimination claims, as I said. But, you know, I think that's probably the right way to treat employees and also helps to manage your risk. I mean, there's always that possibility that you've got your disciplinary process is contractual, though I don't see that very often.
No.
Sometimes you might not realise it's contractual because I've seen that happen, but it's rare.
Yeah, I mean, you might have a recognition agreement as well. That's pretty prescriptive in terms of how you deal with these processes. So it's always worth checking those things. But I think a lot of employers are now alive to the trap of having a contractual disciplinary process and have moved away from having that. But I think, I mean, you're right. The whole point about building a process around it is that consistency of treatment. We've got a whole bunch of questions to answer, so I would like to work through those just to give you some response on it. Before I do, just a reminder, you can get all of our back sessions on Spotify, Amazon Music. You can see the video recordings on our website as well. Helps us out massively if you have a listen to those. So please do. Please give us any feedback for future sessions as well, because we're really open to that. These questions, so what do we as lawyers think about the change and introduction of day one employment rights? I mean, sort of putting to one side where you stand in terms of whether it's a good thing or not, my concern about it is the effect it's going to have on the employment tribunal process. I mean, any of you that are on the call today who have recent experience of dealing with employment tribunal litigation will know it is a slow process. It's something where the timescales have been stretched out despite all the best efforts of the people that work within the tribunal system. I think it's fair to say that resources have been a bit squeezed over recent years. So my concern about it is that inevitably the volume of complaints are going to increase because there's going to be great swathes of people who are going to have these rights to be able to enforce. And there's going to be an uplift in the number of ET1 claim forms being brought, and question mark, has the tribunal got the capacity to cope with that? And that's something that I'm a little bit concerned about.
I would say no. I was in tribunal last week for what was meant to be a final hearing relating to a dismissal that happened in January 2022, and the case was bumped to February 2025. I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, what do I think in terms of the law? I think 2 years is too long. I think it's an arbitrary number. I mean, certainly for a big chunk of my career when I was practicing, the limitation was 12 months. The qualifying service was 12 months, which feels right. But other than that, I think we're all going to be extremely busy.
Yeah, definitely. Did we mention actually about how they might change the law, Adrian? I forget about, a couple of options. Introducing a rule that there can be no unfair dismissal claim if it's during the probationary period, or failed probationary periods might be made one of the potentially fair reasons.
Yeah, no,
So.
we covered that. We covered that. It's just a question of timescales for doing it. So we know there's
Yeah,
going to
so
be a
someone's asked.
consultation.
Yeah, is it going to be within the first 100 days, if they just remove Section 108 of the Employment Rights Act? I mean, maybe the thing is the government are saying that they're going to consult with ACAS and they're going to consult with the trade unions and business on making these changes, and that inevitably is going to take longer than 100 days. And the other thing to work through is the ACAS Code of Practice on disciplinaries and grievances going to apply for these types of dismissals as well? So, I mean, it is right that the government do have the ability to use a statutory instrument. So I don't think they need a full act of parliament. They can rely on the mechanisms that are in the Employment Rights Act at the moment to vary that qualification period for unfair dismissal claims. But will they actually do that given the impact? I don't think so, but
It's got tentacles, that's the problem. It's not just a
yeah.
question of removing one section, is it? But if they are going to introduce it as a fair reason, then it's an addition, for sort of various tweaks. But I mean, they're committed to doing it, so I think I think we all do need to kind of get our skates on to work out what we're
Yeah.
going to do for
I
sure.
like that description. It's got tentacles.
It's
I'm
got
gonna
tentacles,
pinch that.
yeah.
Job description, somebody has asked, anonymous has asked, job description, does this have to be part of the contract and should it be signed? Is the job description shared during the recruitment process via a public posting enough? So I guess that's if you put a JD on LinkedIn, for example. Is that enough from a probation period management perspective?
I don't hold with creating more of an admin burden, if I'm absolutely honest. I don't think that a job description needs to be part of a contract because then it makes it absolutely contractually binding and you don't really have any wriggle room. However, if you've gone to the effort of posting it as part of your job ad, why not just have it as a separate document that you say to them, but that can be part of your process flow on managing probation. Right. This is the job you applied for. Here's the job description for it. This is what we're going to measure you against. Let's go. So I think that's the way that I would deal with that.
Yeah, it's just point about you need to be able to, or you should be able to have something you can point the employee to say, here's where it's written down what our expectations of you are. It's just clear to everybody, isn't it? Victoria asks, if a probationer asserts that their assessor or line manager has not been fair during the probationary period and makes this point, and the assessor is then not changed, would it impact on the possible consequences of failing the probation period? Well, it might. I mean, it might if the probationer has a valid complaint. And again, that's context specific. I mean, this is an example where, although there might not be an express legal obligation on you to change the person that's assessing their probation, it might be prudent and sensible to do so. And it's a bit like those situations where we'll say, look, we don't know for sure this person's a disabled person, or they may not be a disabled person, but there's still a reasonable adjustment that you can make to help them out in the workplace. Yes, there might not be a legal obligation on it for you to do something, but changing it might just avoid an argument down the line. I don't know, what do you
I
think of?
think, well, I think it goes deeper than that. So I'd want to be in a position where your process flow that will sort of summarize towards the end means that that this type of risk is going to be less. So, if the assessor is alleging that the manager's not being fair, I mean, obviously it's open to the employee to raise a grievance about it. But if there's been the job description, if there's been the feedback, if there's been these are your tasks, this is what's expected, here's the support, then anybody looking at that grievance will be able to very quickly see and can't see any unfairness because these are the steps that have been followed, and we can see that that's okay. But I mean, I think yeah, maybe that's something we haven't touched on today's session, that it could increase the risk of grievances. Don't
Yeah,
know.
that's very
Yeah.
true.
But let's try and avoid that if we can.
Let's try and avoid it. Yeah, no grievances, please. Someone's commented, managers see this as a tick in the box to complete probation, don't understand the implications of doing it correctly or incorrectly. Yeah, I mean, I agree that you can see that. That's an education piece. You've got the opportunity to educate your managers and not only educate them on the process you expect them to follow, but really explain why it's relevant. And we see that with like educating in terms of performance processes, why it's important that they do what you're asking them to do because of the legal liability and risk and problems it can create for you if you're the ones that are having to help manage grievances or discrimination claims. So there's definitely an education piece there. Do we think that government will look at performance management within organizations? Probably not. I mean, I've not read anything,
No.
seen anything about that, and I think they would
Well, it's
probably
already
be
there.
reaching. It is in
In
terms of the
terms of
fairness
it's
of
already,
any
yeah, it's already
process, yeah.
there. Yeah, exactly. And it's one of the fair reasons for dismissal. And if it's not done properly, it's an unfair dismissal. So I think that's kind of already there.
Think so. What makes your disciplinary process contractual? Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I mean, it may say, and I've seen this is a contractual disciplinary process. And then it's really obvious. It may be included within the contract of employment, but not have the wording in that says, although this is in your contract of employment, it's a non-contractual process that we follow. So
I like to have express wording either in the
yeah, me
contract
too.
or in the policies which say these do not form part of your contract of employment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Someone's saying thank you, I've got to log off. I think we've overrun slightly, but let me just run through these questions still if you want to stick around and hear the answers. If the extension is in the probation policy but not specified in the contract, but the contract states to refer to the probation policy, does this stand?
Depends if you've given your probation policy contractual effect. The point being is, can you enforce it? You know,
Exactly.
let's think about it. If you say to the employee, the contract refers to the probation policy, that says we can extend it, therefore we're going to extend it. Is the employee really going to say, absolutely not, I'm resigning because you're enforcing something on me that isn't contractual? In which case, okay then. So I'm not necessarily sure that it's a big thing. I think if it's I would argue that if it refers to it, it's probably okay. But unless, of course, your policy gives a positive obligation to extend rather than just the opportunity at the behest of the employer to extend.
Yeah, exactly. Dan has asked any thoughts and considerations, reasonable adjustments during probation and the time they can take to implement, specifically access to work. So for those of you who don't know, access to work is an external organization you can ask to come in. I've seen it used really successfully by clients, but there can be a lag sometimes in terms of getting the organization in and doing their assessments and implementing their recommendations. I mean, that word reasonable is key there because it's all about what's reasonable for you to accommodate, I think, during that period. So if it's something like a 12-month delay, you could well be justified in saying, well, look, it's not reasonable for us to wait that time to implement it. If it's something like a 1-month delay and you've got a 6-month probation period, that points to it being more reasonable for you to just wait. So context specific, but I think you are right to have the mindset of, do we need to think about just stretching our processes
Extending.
here and extending? And the justification for that is you are trying to level the playing field. So you're doing it for somebody who may be a disabled person. It's not going to create an obligation on you to do it for everybody who doesn't share that protected characteristic.
Yeah, not being funny, under the existing law, I think that if you said we have to wait too long, we're not prepared to wait a month, you would very likely face a discrimination claim if you didn't extend and then subsequently dismissed. Because, you know, if there's disability of discrimination arising from disability claims that could be brought there. So I think that's definitely something to keep in mind. But if you're looking at reasonableness, make sure that you've got your decision-making process very clear on why it wouldn't be reasonable to wait, say, 8 months for something to come through, and what else you could do instead. Sorry, I'm getting off topic,
No,
and
it's
that'll make
fine.
us even more delayed.
Let me just take one more question, and sorry to everyone who asked other questions that we haven't been able to answer, but there's been loads today, which is fantastic. So thank you. Caitlin asks, with the proposed day one right to unfair dismissal, do you think it may be amended to be a right for an employee, but only after they've passed their probation period? Well, yeah, I think to Adrian's point earlier, there's a couple of ways they could deal with it. So there might be a rule where there's no unfair dismissal claim permitted if dismissal is during the probation period. So there's effectively a bar on being able to bring that claim. The other way of doing it is to say, we'll make failure of a probation period one of the fair reasons to dismiss. So if you think about at the moment, we've got things like dismissal is fair for redundancy, some other substantial reason, capability, conduct. Section 98, I think, the Employment Rights Act might be amended. This is just speculation from us, by the way, but it might be amended to say it's fair to dismiss someone if there's a probation period failure. Now, that doesn't stop someone sticking a claim in on day one or like month three after probation's failed. They stick the claim in. You then have the argument, we actually dismissed for one of the permitted fair reasons, and this was the fair reason. So you'd still have to deal with the litigation, but you've got that defense to run. So that's how it could happen. We don't know. This is us just speculating. Obviously, we're going to keep you up to date on all these changes. There's going to be an awful lot happening over the next 6 months, 9 months. So follow us on LinkedIn and just connect with us because we're pretty active in posting updates on there. And of course, we're going to be doing more of these sessions. Just to wrap up then, our takeaways for today. Number one, revisit how your probation periods are captured in your employment contract. So go and have a look at the wording that you've got in there already. Is it fit for purpose? Set your expectations at the start. Give feedback and communicate and record. Do those three things in terms of feedback. Train your managers. They need to know the framework and they need to know why it's important and why it matters and why it could be increasingly important. Be flexible around absences. Consider extending the probation periods. And finally, keep up to date on the changes. And as I say, to that end, just keep in contact with us and we'll be giving you some updates. Thanks, everybody that joined live today. Thanks for all the questions. Absolutely fantastic. We'll be running another session in a couple of weeks' time. Although I think you're disappearing off on holiday, Adrienne. So me and an other, we're jumping on a train now to go and see some lovely clients in London. So we're going to go. Enjoy the rest of your week. Any questions or feedback, just drop me an email, but enjoy the rest of your week. So thanks, everybody.